Well, thank you. All of you can hear me, I hope. Actually, this is fortuitous. The Exuma keys will come up in this talk also again. So I'm going to speak tonight towards a revision of Cluniotti's Guenée, 1854, which is a revision that I'm doing for my dissertation. Since the revision is still in progress, I'd like to give the first half of this talk to give some background and show some other projects that I've been working on. For some context, Cluniotti's includes about 20 described species of neotropical pyraloid moths, mostly in the distributed in cloud forests. But to give some background context, it's a member of one of the larger genera in the subfamily Odontianae down here, which is one of the better characterized subfamilies of the Pyraloidea. It received special attention from the recently deceased Jean Monroe, who pretty accurately characterized most of the elements of this group on a worldwide basis, based on these unusual characters in the male genitalia, which include soft and placate valvae, kind of floppy valvae, and likewise so-called bilobate uncus, which is kind of like a soft hot dog bun that wraps around the nathos, this thing up here. The wing pattern is fairly variable. Subsequently, Patrice Leroux and a co-author characterized a number of the members of this subfamily as a separate tribe, the Europini, that have an unusual modification of this apparatus as part of the male genitalia. This consists of a pair of so-called lamelliform structures, which are fascicles of fused CD up here on the eighth sternite, and a pair of so-called squamiform structures, which are large scale-like things fused at the vinculum. This photograph here is inverted from, this is posterior head down here. The exact homology of these squamiform structures is unclear. Nobody's really looked into it, but they seem to be a pair of enormous hypertrophic scales, which are upwards of 800 microns in length in the largest individuals. This is pretty evidently a stridulatory apparatus. What happens is that these squamiform, as the genitalia are rhythmically, repeatedly pulled into and everted from the abdomen during the course of male courtship to disperse pheromones, these lamelliform structures scrape against the applique on the squamiform structures. We actually have recordings from one species, Cintanarca in Australia, which itself has, Gwynn and Edwards, 1986, which itself is a bizarrely modified apparatus. It's asymmetrical and so forth. But my dissections have indicated that most of the things in the tribe do in fact have the apparatus in a pretty basic conformation, including Cluniotti's. Again, you can see here the CD on the eighth sternite, and these things here are the squamiform structures, SEMs of two different species. This is a phylogeny that I've worked up for the several members of the group. The European includes about 200 described species of pantropical distribution. This phylogeny shows the relations of the neotropical clades. And I'd like to characterize, first of all, one interesting clade that does not include Cluniotti's, but it does include a number of mainly paleotropical elements, and it also has a further unusual modification of the apparatus, in which the lamelliform structures are lost and appear to be functionally replaced by a pair of thickened areas that floating in the membrane between S8 and the vinculum. So as the genitalia are reverted into the abdomen, these things fold up against the squamiform structures, rubbing against them. All of the members of this are paleotropical, except for this new species, which is I'm going to characterize as a new genus, known from the two collecting events in the Cuba, the Bahamas. Actually, the Bahamas, it's known from Great Exuma. Probably the best known member of this genus, though, of the tribe, though, is Deinolus, the red-banded mango borer, probably one of the worst pests of mangoes in Southeast Asia. It's a seed feeder. And the optimizations that I'm recovering I'm making the generalization that most of the members of the Europini are, in fact, are seed borers, with a few secondary reversions to folivory. So I'm going to, this is the blue is here is a seed feeding habit. Green is another clade that I'm going to characterize that does include cliniotes. So what I'm characterizing is the mesarium feeding clade. Cliniotes is the neotropical representatives of this. The mesarium plant family includes, well, I'll get to that in a minute. This clade includes cliniotes with 20 to 30 species in North America, South America. North America, one isolate, Maitreya. Southeast Asia, Heortia, with about four species down here. And a couple of other genera that are smaller bodied from Southeast Asia, which appear to be facultative feeders on these plants. They're generally large and robust and have this unusual band on the hind wings, short upturned labial palpi, characters that are unusual within the tribe. The Thymeliaceae is, that is to say, the mesarium family, is an unusual family that known for producing a number of insect feeding deterrents. Most interestingly, these diterpenoids, or so-called four-ball esters, which are, in addition to their feeding deterrents, these are some of the most potent tumor-promoting compounds known. They're not carcinogenic per se in vertebrates, but these are what you typically inject into rats and guinea pigs to hasten the growth of tumors after the fact. This clade that I'm looking into appears to be the first substantial radiation of Lepidoptera on Thymeliaceae. There are a few micros that also specialize on it. So here's cliniotes in the neotropics. By the way, I should mention that our records come from Janssen's Guanacaste project, but the host plant association is pretty general. Heortia in Southeast Asia. These are also some of the largest bodied externally feeding pyraloidea. Other pyraloidea that are external feeders tend to be, most pyraloids, of course, are internal feeders, but the other similarly large-bodied ones that feed externally also feed on things like Apocynaceae, Caparidaceae. Interestingly, also, Heortia has emerged as a recent pest on Aquilaria, Thymeliaceae, and grown in fairly highly valuable incense in Southeast Asia plantations. So here we have cliniotes from the Atlantic coastal forest. This is a new female of a new species. Here's Heortia in Southeast Asia. I realized that to figure out the rooting of this genus, I'd better look in for African material. So with the support of the NSF, I've been able to investigate several European institutions, and I've turned up these things from Madagascar, some described and misplaced in various genera. Again, I think you can see the connections, and sure enough, they actually do crop out in this within this large clade right here. This is all cliniotes, Heortia, and these new things. Thank you. This large clade is actually a consensus of, again, don't ask for support values or anything on this, because this is everything I have in the matrix. I just threw it into TNT, and sure enough, it comes out here. Now, the typical cliniotes that you'll actually find in collections are the more derived and widespread Andean species that may or may not have this apical spot and this sexually dimorphic hindwing terminal band. Typical genitalia. Centers of endemism of the group are along the cloud forests of the Andes, again congruent with the predicted hosts, Daphnopsis. These are the known species. Also, there are several isolates in the down here in the Atlantic coastal forest and also the Antilles. There is one North American species, Maitreya austrinalis, which, again, is known to feed on our one local species of Thymeliaceae, Dirca palustris, or leatherwood. And my research and collections indicates that this is much more widely distributed in eastern North America than previously supposed. It does have the apparatus. I still have not actually seen this insect alive because they're not strongly phototropic, but I'd really like to see this in the lab. Sure enough, it comes out into cliniotes, I'll sink it. These are new species that I'll be describing, at least 10 from all different geographic regions and different areas on the in the phylogeny. Finally, I'd like to wrap up by saying that it's far too early to speculate about speciation mechanisms. But there is a certain amount of sympatry in, again, based on collections records in the areas of the Andes. I'm suspecting that they produce actually different signals with the acoustic apparatus because there are interspecific differences in the width and striation of the plicae. In fact, for example, this thing has a bald patch right here between the striae. This is a superballus, more common saburalis. So I'll stay tuned for next year. I'll have actually the more final results, but I'd like to take this moment to acknowledge all the institutions that have loaned me material and or shown me evidence, and all their collections managers, and also some of the several people who have helped me with more specific things, such as especially Alma Solis, who set me on the Odontinae, and my advisor Jim Liebherr, many other people. Funding has been provided by the NSF's DIG program and the Cornell Rollins Endowment, and also thanks to the Hennig Society for free access to excellent software. Thank you, and I'll take questions.
So is it possible that those structures, rather than being just acoustic, might be employed in copula also?
The question is whether the structure is actually used in copula. That's a good question. Gwynn and Edwards were not able to replicate this in the laboratory. Their recordings were entirely field recordings. I would doubt it based upon the delicacy of the structures. These are very thin, but they're regularly obliterated in dissections. This is why Jean Monroe wasn't able to didn't recognize the difference because of poor preparations. It's possible. I don't know. Okay, thank you. Thank you.